Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Rick Ingram Talks to Strangers. And now, here's your host, Rick Ingram.
Welcome back to Rick Ingram Talks to Strangers. When I say welcome back, I mean it's the second episode, so it's not been a long ride, but we appreciate you staying on the ride. Lots of exciting things happening. I don't know what any of them are, to be perfectly frank, but we have some cool guests. Hopefully, and we're just going to get into it. So my first guest today, Vanessa, what I'm overhearing your name is. Do you want to say your full name?
Vanessa Wells.
Vanessa Wells?
Yeah.
All right, pretty good name. Where are you from, Vanessa?
I'm from New York.
New York, the city or the state?
I'm from Long Island originally.
Okay.
And then I spent some time in Manhattan and Brooklyn.
All right, so full city, basically. You're getting a good spectrum of it all. And do you live out here now, or do you still live in New York?
No, I live out here.
Do you like it better or worse?
Neither.
No?
It's just sort of a lateral move.
Yeah.
Different, but not better.
Okay, fair enough. I personally don't care for New York City.
That's fair.
I'm from Kansas originally, and... I find that where I'm from, it smells terrible a lot of the times due to country smells.
Uh-huh.
And when I was in New York City the first time, I was kind of blown away. One, it was August, so it was a little hot.
Yeah.
But the scent of rotting trash might have actually overtaken the cow shit smell that I'm naturally accustomed to.
Summer dumpster smell is its own eau de toilette.
It was interesting. It was sometime in the early 2000s, and I was there with Andrew Dice Clay, and he obviously is a big New York guy, so he kept telling me on the way there how amazing it is. And then we got there, and there was some sort of like a trash. They were on strike or something.
Unions, you know.
Yeah.
They have that right.
An enormous city where they were on strike, and so it was just bags piled up on the sidewalk.
On the actual street.
Yeah.
There's no, discretion when it comes to hot trash in New York. It's all just, out in front.
Yeah.
Which is a redeeming quality about New York. It's you know what you're going to
They're not hiding anything.
They're not hiding it. It's all, in your face. And that being said, you know. Only the strong survive.
Yeah, well, I could see that. There was something I found to be odd and interesting was that there's street vendors everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a guy selling hot peanuts, which was really odd to me that it was 95 degrees and 8 million percent humidity. But he was heating up peanuts, and he had a cart set up directly next to approximately 75 bags of garbage. And there were still people stopping and eating the peanuts.
New Yorkers are really good at compartmentalizing, right? We find ways to create space where there is none. And also, I guess, turn off certain senses. So you can, turn off your summer garbage smell to smell hot roasted peanuts.
See, that's interesting.
And then, just keep it moving. And you're like, oh, my God, it fucking smells like garbage.
It's a superpower. When you are near the peanuts, you focus the smell.
Exactly.
You grew up there, Long Island, you said?
Yeah.
Now, Long Island's weird to me, too, because it's got, sections where it's super nice. It's almost kind of L.A. in this way. There's, a super nice area of Long Island, and then you drive, two blocks, and it's absolute hell on
Earth. Yeah, it's like Judgment Day. It's a pretty bifurcated, I would say, kind of social scape. And there's literally some towns where cross the proverbial train tracks, and it's the town is divided economically and social status between north and south, I don't love about it at all. And then you have exorbitant wealth and other pockets of poverty,
a little bit of everything
and a tremendous middle class, obviously. There's the perception of New York as being a very liberal blue state, and that's, Long Island is part of the offset of that.
Right.
Because it's actually, there's
a lot of conservative people.
A lot of conservative, a lot of Republican, and that sort of white flight syndrome of people who left the city.
Right.
Because the neighborhood was changing.
Yeah.
Back in the day. So.
You could just say it, angry white Italians, and.
I'm. I have to like reserve judgment as an Italian, but
I see.
But you're also not fucking wrong.
I'm not like, wrong.
You're not.
And you know, I'm basically a mix of a lot of the worst whites. You know, I'm Irish and Swedish and German and and I feel that all of them are worthy of ridicule.
Yes.
I'm a firm believer in general. My philosophy about life is mock all that deserves to be mocked. 100%. And yeah. People generally are offended by that. And I find that to be mockable as well. So
absolutely. Like, know your weaknesses and know where you deserve to be laughed at and learn to laugh at yourself.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, like, absolutely.
No one is above ridicule and no one is above being held accountable to being a better version.
Yeah. So. And they're not going to become better people. So I think it's important to just ridicule them until they're broken.
Just break them down.
It's maybe that's because I've been in LA for a long time, but I really feel like just tearing people down and then, you know, maybe no one ever hires a construction company to build them
exactly.
back up.
Yeah.
But sometimes figure shambles out. Is a better place than what they were at one yeah. point.
Figure out how to scrape yourself off the concrete.
Yep.
Or don't. Yeah. Stay there.
Hang or out. Step over the and splatter on the concrete.
Yes.
Now, are you an actress?
No.
Did you move to L.A. for work? What brought you to L.A.?
Honestly, I just wanted a change of pace.
Yeah.
Well,
it's a lot slower here.
It's a lot slower.
It's casual.
Yeah, there's a different quality of life, and there's a different prioritization of lifestyle here.
Yeah.
And, you know, I grew up in New York. I did the New York grind for a while, and I kind of got to a point in my life where I was like, all right, what is the New York version of success? What is my version of success? Do those things line up? And they did not.
They did not. No. What do you think the New York version of success is?
So there's the power grab where it's like, I work 85 hours a week
sure.
and I make all this money, but I have no time with my family. I have no time to like travel or do things except for these little pockets that I'm allowed to if I request the time, right? Like
right.
there's not a whole lot of self-agency in that version.
Yeah.
And then you have its sort of counterpart, which is the, you know, aspiring creative who gets kind of stuck in whatever jobs to pay the bills and can't really get that creative stuff off the ground.
Yeah.
Because it is a sweltering city, not just in, you know,
yeah.
summer dumpster time, but in the way that, like, it will press you just to survive there is a job in and of itself. So I didn't want to be working 85 hours a week and having no personal
Nothing.
Life.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to have no money, but plenty of time. So I was like, let me just go somewhere else. So I just got rid of my shit and I came here and I never been here before.
Really?
Never been to California. So.
So you didn't even come check it out first?
No.
You just moved?
I just moved.
Well, I'll give you credit for this. There is no reason to look at other cities in the country. like when the pandemic started, a lot of people in LA moved and people are yeah. like, are you going to stay? Are you going to go? I'm like, where am I going to go?
Yeah.
I don't want to go anywhere else. Yeah. Like, well, you know, you could go and they listed all the cities that people like to pretend are decent cities.
It's still
cities.
Just a city, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really even a city. It's just like these yeah. towns that you wouldn't go to, but we're suddenly pretending like are really cool.
Do they just feel like bigger shopping centers?
Kind of.
You know, like yeah. street malls.
Yeah.
And it's like called a city.
Yeah, and there's most of them have no like soul to where
yeah.
it means anything. And people look. Moved to Nashville, which if you're a musician, I kind of get.
Yeah.
And if you're not, makes no sense to me at all.
Yeah. It's also like in the middle of Tennessee. Who
yeah.
the fuck wants to be there?
And they always go, well, it's the cool city. And I go, yeah, in a shitty state.
Yeah.
Listen, if we have any listeners in Tennessee, I don't apologize for anything I just said. Austin was the other big one. A lot of people moved to Austin.
A lot of people moved to Austin. I wonder
yeah.
how they feel about that after today.
Probably not great,
yeah.
but at the same time, most people are brainwashed into believing whatever they want. So, but yeah, I mean, I have friends who've lived in Austin for years and they're like, yeah, it's okay.
Yeah.
But none of them are like, it's the best city. You should consider moving here.
Yeah.
It's just people like, it is what
do.
It is. Yeah.
yeah.
They get by.
Yeah.
And I always think people are like, well, you know, they don't charge exorbitant taxes like they do in California. I'm like, dude, you make $45,000 a year.
Yeah. What are you saving on taxes?
Yeah. You didn't do any better by moving there, but
A plus on adulting on that one.
Yeah. Yeah, people have no idea what they're talking about. And I'm from Kansas City, and I would never recommend anyone live there.
Right. You're on the Kansas side of Kansas City.
I am, thank God.
Yeah.
Not that it's any different, but just the state pride. Missouri's our Jersey, if that makes any sense. Every state just has a trickle-down state.
What is Kansas's Staten Island, though?
Ooh, probably Wyandotte County. It's just kind of the northwestern part of Kansas City.
Okay.
And, you know, a lot of blue collar, what's the word? Trash, I guess. Listen, if you're in Staten Island or Wyandotte County, we're just going to have to change the name of this podcast to No Apologies with Rick Ingram, because I'm going to pretty much, I think, tear down everyone. And the other main place people moved, which is baffling to me, is Florida. And I just don't get it at all. I don't even know why people visit Florida.
I don't know. I mean, I've done that, right?
Yeah.
It's like when you're on the East Coast, that's kind of
that's where you go.
Where you it's go because it's
easiest,
hot. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's just a swamp.
Yeah, and it's literally a swamp.
Yeah, it's like if you took New York summer dumpster.
Yep.
And then you added more humidity.
Yeah.
And gators.
Lots of gators.
And old people smell.
Gotta love that.
And you've got Florida.
The scent of decay is really.
Who would not want to book a ticket there?
I don't know if you saw this, and it has nothing to do with us, but I was just reading an article earlier today about an older man in Louisiana whose wife claims that he was eaten by an alligator in the floodwaters of Hurricane
mm-hmm.
Ida.
Mm-hmm.
So he was walking in the water, and he apparently got attacked by an alligator, and then she saved him somehow. She's an old woman, but she saved him. And then she went to get help, and then the alligator came back and finished him off.
Did he jump back in?
He was crawled up. I believe that she murdered him before the hurricane.
She just threw him in
and
there.
And then she was like, perfect opportunity for the old alligator in the hurricane story, mm-hmm. which is pretty awesome. And if I'm watching Forensic Files and they do a 30-minute episode about how the alligator could not have done it, I'm staying tuned. So
yeah, I wanna see how that story plays out.
Yeah,
because you know, props for the Southern ingenuity of that.
Smart,
like how to use your like natural resources to actually accomplish the goal.
You're like, well, if he drowns, he's gonna float up. So how do we change this? Since I buried him in the backyard 2 days ago,
now that it's mud.
Yeah, alligator.
Gator came in.
So what do you do in LA?
I have my own practice as a healer.
You're a healer?
I'm a healer.
What do you heal?
Yeah. Usually I people with trauma.
Okay, so you're healing the mind.
Yeah, it's okay. More of a spiritual psychological hybrid.
Okay. Do you have a title? Is there a title for that kind of, is healer the title?
Intuitive coaching.
Intuitive coaching. That makes it sound way more intense.
Mm. It is intense, yeah.
And what does this involve exactly? Is this just talking through issues?
No, I mean, because I don't ever want to misrepresent myself as a therapist. I'm not that.
Right.
But it is about giving and holding space for people to just kind of show up as they are without feeling judged, without feeling shame, without feeling guilt. And yes, process some thoughts and feelings, but also to create action steps for how to move through that and forward from that. So the intuitive part is really just me kind of tuning in to each person and not like creating a script and just plug and play type
right.
stuff.
It's not a Mad Libs of healing.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's not like, yeah.
By the way, my other podcast, Mad Libs of Healing, starts next week. What made you want to get into this?
Really, just my own process. You know, I went through a lot of my own shit. And
you helped yourself. You healed your mind.
I mean, I helped myself, but also a lot of other people helped me. And there's also just sort of a natural predisposition. I'm that person that people come to and that is really good at listening.
Yeah.
So it just kind of became a natural maturation of myself. So
people come to me when they want to talk shit about someone else.
About someone else.
Like I'm that guy.
Yeah.
Like I have people who I'm not even friends with approach me, I'm like, what do they want to talk about?
But like, there is a very clear, well, maybe not so clear distinction between talking shit and just saying.
Well, that's also true.
So
I have a buddy who he's half Italian, but raised in an Italian household, because he always would tell me about how Italian he was, and I wanted to be like, your last name is 100% English. But he is a big believer in saying horrible things and then finishing it off with, just saying.
Just saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's like he truly, in his mind, can get away with anything. Like he says something distinctly racist.
Yeah.
And then you look at him like, and they'll go, I'm just saying.
I'm just saying. Like, just be honest.
Yeah.
And you're like,
if you're just saying.
No. Should that honesty be broadcast?
I think everyone likes talking shit, and people are uncomfortable with the thought of being called out for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they just know that since I don't like that many people, there's a good chance I'm going to be on board.
You'll be fine with it.
Yeah.
Right. So like the same way you hold space for people shit talking.
Yeah. You're helping them out.
I hold space for people to kind of shit talk themselves and their families and everyone who's ever wronged them.
Okay.
And then like, do something with that.
Try and make it better. Yeah, because I'm just making it worse for sure.
But, you know, like, we all have our part to play.
So. Yeah. And mine is the devil, and yours is an angel of some sort.
I don't know if that's true or fair.
Fair enough. Dark angel, I guess. Oh. I should have said. What kind of trauma did you go through that made you have to start healing?
No, I grew up in the 80s. Yeah. So there's,
when growing up was good.
Like, it was good when growing up was good on the surface, right? Like, everyone did a really good job of, like, making sure the surfaces were polished.
Yeah.
And then, like, underneath, it was like, the shit is rusting out.
Well, it was easier because there was no social media.
Exactly.
So people only knew what they saw.
It.
Yeah, it was like, oh, everything's great at home. And you were just like, okay.
Yeah.
And you didn't care that much because you didn't have to read everyone's opinions about everything.
Yeah, exactly. There wasn't anyone like actually holding you accountable to some sort of fucking standard, right?
Yeah, and I think the main issue now is there's a false morality that exists in social media because everyone just presents how they want to appear as opposed
curated.
To how they are.
Yeah.
But,
and there is like a counter movement against that I think maybe goes even a little too far, just as far as like, I don't want to tell anybody like what they should and shouldn't do necessarily, but also like if your whole TikTok thing is you getting on there crying all the time, like is that useful? Is that helpful? Are you actually leveraging that to something that people can relate to and get movement from, or is this just sort of some like self-flagellation over and over and over again? And it's like, I'm not here to participate in that. Like, I'm not telling anyone not to do it, but I'm also going to like not subscribe.
Well, I think victim is one of the biggest brands of social media.
Yeah.
Like people very genuinely,
not even just social media, life
in general. Yeah, I guess life. That's true. You just see it more. People will get the instant gratification of knowing from likes, which in itself is weird that you're liking someone's victimhood.
Yeah,
but like
it's a dopamine hit for sure.
It is. And like today was weird because they passed that abortion law in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of people sharing stories about how they had to have an abortion and the circumstances that led to it and like traumatic stuff that like I'm reading it. And I'm just like, damn, that is intense.
Yep.
And then my thought is, do I like that? Am I supposed to like,
so like
this or
right,
not?
Right, like exactly. Like,
are they
by liking this, am I like so happy for you? I mean, like, there's an empowering way to talk about stuff and to do stuff, right? And there's a way that, like, by sharing a story, you give other people a sense of safety and permission to also share their story. And by sharing our stories, we can then process the parts that got stuck, the parts that we didn't have the tools for, and the parts that, like, we tamped down out of shame or guilt or not knowing what the fuck to do, right?
You're part of a community as opposed to
like there's an empowering way to do that. And then there is a disempowering way to do that where it just becomes a little bit more about the performativeness, and everyone processes their own shit in their own way. So I really try not to interject judgment on it, but I think there is some responsibility of being self-aware of the impact of of things that are broadcast.
Right.
Because that can be equally damaging to somebody who's already in a tough spot, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's that balance of like, you know, welcome to being in a global community where you don't have to like, right? Like,
yeah.
That's the thing. We get to swipe or change the channel and be
yeah.
like, I don't know if I can hear this.
And there's a lot of, I guess the word is horrible people that can also interact where it's not, you know, I was raped and I had to have an abortion and I deal with this every day in my life for the last 15 years.
Yeah.
And then you get 20 comments of people who are like, I'm so sorry that happened to you. I'm proud of you for being strong.
Right.
And then you get some dude who's just like, oh, well, what were you wearing?
Yeah.
And you're like,
right.
Oh,
you're like,
human beings are terrible.
You didn't catch up. You didn't get the memo. We're in the 21st century.
I was going deep on some of these rabbit holes today, like just looking at it, like, I know there's going to be terrible people. And I'm just, that really fuels my personal belief that human beings are awful.
Right.
And so, you know, I'll seek it out sometimes if I start getting that feeling like
you want that validation.
Life is all right. And then I'm like, no, it's not. Oh, thank God I can still be terrible to people as long as you're being terrible to the right people.
Well,
so
that's
every
true.
Monster needs a monster is really how I look at it.
It's true. Yeah.
All right. So you're out here, you're healing. How do people find a healer? A therapist, obviously, you know, you can look up therapist.
Yeah.
What is someone who's looking for a healer? What are they?
I mean, we all kind of like run in similar circles. So, you know, it can start as easily as like your chiropractor or your acupuncturist or something that's a little bit more like kind of mainstream and something that people
sure.
do more regularly. And then, you know, for the right people, it's just a matter of like making that connection and building that relationship. So if somebody's just like, you know what? You're working through some of that childhood stuff, like maybe it would be helpful to see this person, my colleague, do some of this work. And it's like I do a lot of shadow work, which is just sort of like, you know, accepting and integrating
right.
the parts of yourself that you've been ashamed of for a really long time.
Wow. LA is a great place because there's a lot of shame here.
There's a lot of shame everywhere. Like that was the thing. There was shame in New York and but because New York is such a grinded out culture, it's like, I don't have time to fucking think about that.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like, just keep it down. Just keep it
down.
Yeah.
Oh, keep it moving. You got issues?
Yeah.
Bury it. We
yeah.
got work to do.
Oh, you think you got issues? Please don't even talk about it. Don't even tell me about it. And you're just like, oh, okay. Sure.
The Italian-ness was coming out just now, by the way.
I know. I've had a drink.
That was your impression of local New Yorker. And it was like, we know what community she's a part of now.
Local New Yorker. Yeah. I love my Italian heritage, and
good.
I do, and I also see it for what it is.
Sure.
So,
do you date short men?
No.
No, absolutely not.
No.
All right, you don't love your Italian heritage that much.
Let's also, I mean, in all fairness, like, I'm Northern Italian.
Oh,
I have a different standard.
Sure, yeah.
Different standard, and I'm also German and Slavic, so it's...
Okay.
I've got a lot of that, like, and yeah, I love Scottish guys, Scottish Irish guys.
Scottish guys. That's a very specific.
Scottish
weird
and
thing.
Irish.
What is it about Scottish and Irish guys? Like, actually, from Scotland and Ireland, or American people of Scottish
I
and
mean,
Irish lineage? All of the above.
All of the above, preferably the native.
The an actual Scotsman.
The actual, yeah.
It's such a weird...
I like authenticity. Yeah.
You do. It's such a weird accent, Scottish accent. I don't even know. If I was single, I don't think I could go out with a Scottish girl because I would literally giggle all the time.
But that's part of it. It's like
that's the
enjoyment. They will always entertain you. Like,
sure.
You know, they can be mad and you can be like...
I feel like this is a secret way of looking down on your significant other. Like, you want to date a Scottish guy, so that way you can constantly be like, listen to this asshole.
This is motherfucker.
Yeah, I'm definitely better than this guy.
In all fairness, when I get angry, my New York Italian accent comes out.
It starts
and
going.
They can laugh at me just as fucking hard. So,
yeah.
It really does balance it out.
When you get angry, do your earrings get larger
I do.
This is
no,
just,
my rings do though.
This is just a theory I have about Italian women that it actually grows with the rage inside of them.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't wear earrings.
You don't do it. All right.
So I can't. I can't really attest.
Yeah.
I feel like the neckline tends to get deeper on the shirts, right? Like
that
the Italian
makes sense.
Women love
yeah.
like the deep neckline.
Yeah.
Which I favor.
Yeah. There's like, nothing wrong with that. So a lot of cleavage in Long Island. Next week, tune in to Long Island Cleavage with Rick Ingram. That's probably going to be the most popular podcast.
That's a good one.
My goal is to each podcast have about 40 new podcasts.
Yes.
At least ideas.
Yeah.
A lot of people like to come up with band names. I try and focus solely on new podcast names.
Podcast topics. You can never have enough podcasts.
Never. I'm a firm believer of you show a man a podcast, he listens for an hour. You teach a man to podcast, everyone's going to hate your guts. That was my biggest issue with starting this podcast was like, do people want more podcasts? But I think people do.
But hey, you're a white male. Why not?
Nothing can stop
Nothing
me.
Nothing can stop a white male
I can
on a
do
podcast.
Whatever I want. Straight white male. You know what I mean? Every time I'm like, no one wants to listen, I'm like, oh, wait. All the other places other than New York and L.A., they have nothing else to do.
They have nothing to do.
So they need as many podcasts as possible to get through their lives, which are really awesome, but also completely unlivable as far as I'm
really
concerned.
Really long. I feel like they're really long.
Long days.
Lots of space to fill.
So much space. I drove to Denver, Colorado like a month and a half ago.
Mm.
Unbelievable how little there is between Denver and Los Angeles. I mean, there's... Yeah. Easily 100-mile stretches with nothing except for a few random sheds. Not even sure who the sheds are for or what's in the sheds.
The shed and the broken fence that is vaguely in the vicinity, but
like,
not really.
You're thinking 100 years ago, was this shed like a really nice shed?
Yeah.
And then why is it still there? Why isn't the wind at least knocked it down? All right, well, if people can... Is there a place they can... reach out if they need healing, if they want to talk to someone. Is there somewhere where they can contact you?
I got a website and everything.
Okay.
It's Dark Hearts Healing Arts.
DarkHeartsHealingArts.com. Wow, okay.
Yeah.
Dark Hearts is a reference to you.
Yes.
Listen, this sounds like evil witchcraft, but it works. That's the important thing.
It does work. That is the thing.
Is there any level of witchcraft to you? I'm assuming Catholic.
I was raised Catholic.
Well, everyone's raised Catholic.
And then we all like abandoned ship.
Yeah, you can't stick
with that.
Aren't you
like, what is going on here with the hats and the whatnot?
Yeah, there's too much dudes only going on. Yeah. Obviously, a staggering amount of pedophilia.
Yes.
And it's weird that it still exists.
It's a weird vibe.
Yeah.
Overall, it's a weird vibe.
Is your family still Catholic?
So my dad was never religious.
Okay, that's good.
And he was the Italian one. But my mom had the like just in case thing, you know, where she's like, no, I'm gonna go to church, you know,
sure.
for the just in case, the insurance policy of it, in case this is
if there
right,
is heaven,
and I fucking die, like I want to make sure I did the right thing. She would drag me with her to like a very specific point. Like once I made my confirmation and then I was like, I don't have to fucking do this anymore.
Yeah.
And she was like, you should still do that. And I'm like, I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
I'm not doing this. This sucks. And then I bailed out. But,
I find a lot of people are Catholic kind of until their grandparents die. And then there's no reason after that to pretend anymore.
Yeah. It's like, especially like in an Irish or an Italian family where it's like, it's just like, make Nona happy. Like,
yeah.
Let her have this win.
She was Irish and super Catholic. And we would go to church with her like Easter, Christmas, and her birthday.
Yeah.
And then once she died, there was... she just kind of got crazy.
Yeah.
And then we were like, she doesn't know anymore,
she
so we don't have to
difference.
Pretend.
It's going to be fine. Yeah. No, my grandparents weren't religious either.
No?
No.
And they were all Long Island, or are they old country?
My grandparents were born here, but definitely my grandfather's parents came over. They had actually a kind of cool story where... my great-grandmother was just, like, not down with Mussolini when he was starting to, like, crop
up. It's a radical view.
Around 1919, she's like, there's this guy stirring up shit, and I don't see it going very well. Yeah. I want to get my kid out of here.
Smart.
So, yeah, so they came here to beat that clusterfuck. But, yeah, so...
Tune in next week to the Mussolini clusterfuck with Rick Ingram.
And how to escape. It's an escape room, actually.
See, now we're talking. Yeah. I think...
You get boats involved.
Revolutionary Italian. This thing's going to take off in terms of escape rooms. I've never done one, but I feel like a Mussolini-themed one is really going to up the incentive.
Like on the water, right? Like the...
I mean, he's like legit fascist, I think.
He is a fascist. Yeah,
yeah, like that was his thing.
Yeah, he was the fascist of the group.
God, the OG of fascism. Fascism.
Fascism.
All right, well, one more time. What's the website? Dark Hearts.
DarkHeartsHealingArts.com.
.com. And you can go and get in contact with someone who can maybe help you. I don't know how fucked up you are.
You want to be like a pretty solid level of fucked up, but not so fucked up that you're beyond help.
Yeah, not. It's general. Okay, so.
Like, fucked up and working with it.
Yeah, okay, that's good.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't want to be stubborn fucked up.
No, I don't have patience for that. I don't have time.
I like that. I want someone trying to heal who doesn't have patience for someone who's not willing to be healed.
I don't have time for people's bullshit. Like, let's do it.
All right. Well, thank you for being on. I appreciate it. Yeah. And we'll be back with another guest in a minute. Say hi. All right, we're back, guys. We have another stranger about ready to be brought to the world and cherished for sure. I don't know what your name is. There's a lot of hype going on about this name. The people are clamoring at home to find out more about this. Are you a symbol? What is your name? What do you go by?
Well, I'm Tim Regan. I'm
Tim Regan,
an Irish kid from Massachusetts. So, how you doing? Nice to meet you.
nice work, Tim, by the way. Smooth right off the bat.
Works well. I'm married. It's fine.
right. Tim Regan from Massachusetts. What part of Massachusetts are you from?
North of Boston, right near the New Hampshire border.
Okay.
It's called Newburyport, Massachusetts.
When people ask where you're from, do you say you're from Boston?
Depends where I am. Okay. If I'm anywhere in the Northeast, then I just say where I'm from, and they don't know where that is, and then I just say north of Boston.
Right.
If I'm in LA, I just say Boston.
It's easier. I've met a lot of people out here from Boston, and I've come to find out over the years that none of them are from Boston.
Oh, yeah, no.
It's just a go-to because...
You don't know where I'm from.
Yeah. I knew this dude who was allegedly from Boston for a couple of years before I found out that he was from Worcester.
Yeah, that's a thing.
And then I found out more about Worcester, and I was like, oh, you probably didn't tell me that on purpose. Well,
there also becomes like the areas around Boston, which are like acceptable to actually call yourself from Boston if you're
it's close
there.
Enough.
You know, like if you're from Somerville or Brookline or some of the places that are like just outside of Boston, it's like, all right, they can say they're from Boston. It's like
Brookline, that's a place. Brookline,
yeah.
And is it just Brooklyn, but they have a retarded accent?
No, there's no Y in it. So there's an actual
L-I-N-E. Brookline.
I don't know. Those crazy New Yorkers and their terrible spelling.
Whoa.
Can't help it. Oh, listen, I hate New York. Anywho, continue.
I brought you here because I wanted the two of you to fight to the death on
this
podcast.
You wanted an Irish-Italian showdown.
I wanted to see what would happen.
Boston versus New York.
What our grandparents did on the streets.
Exactly.
And, you know, the gangs of New York era.
That's why I wore my rings, man.
Smart. You're gonna cut.
I'm prepared. I got sharp elbows.
You're gonna cut Tim pretty deep. I can tell.
Most likely.
And what brought you to LA? You live in LA now, I assume.
I do. Yeah.
Okay. So what brought you here?
Well, when I got out of the military, I got a job that took me to LA, and I've been here since 2012, I guess.
All right. And what branch of the military were you in?
I was in the Navy.
You're
for
a Navy
10
man.
Years, I was on submarines, and I was a nuclear operator, and I worked with the electric plant and the reactor on board the submarine.
Wow. Okay, that's pretty intense. Pretty submarine, I mean, we all assume that it's just a party 24 hours a day, I think.
Straight party, you know. It's a bit wild because it's not like the rest of the military where we're a bit more, I guess, loose.
Is that true?
Yeah, it actually is. Like you're trapped in a tube 400 feet underwater with a bunch of other dudes. Things are going to get a little weird.
Is there any, there's no women on board?
When I was in, there were not. Today, there are.
Okay.
So they have since been integrated. Some of them, not all of them.
That has to be very uncomfortable, I would assume, for
you'd
the
get
women.
Get over it real quick. You'd be surprised like what you can learn to deal with. Like...
learning to deal with women in close proximity, the fucking horror.
Non-stop.
It
actually was a pretty positive move that they were able to do it.
It was probably cleaner.
It's actually really tricky. Like, the whole issue didn't come down to, like, sexism. It came down to, like, bathroom facilities, which was, like, the question that actually kept women off of submarines for, like, a number of years was, like, because there's so few bathrooms. Uh-huh. So there's like 140 people on a Los Angeles class submarine. So it's a rather small group. And there's like two bathrooms for like the entire crew to use.
That's just like poor urban planning.
Yeah.
It's there's no space. Yeah. Like you're sleeping three high, shoulder to shoulder, you know, the entire time. Like there's literally no privacy.
Yeah.
Your only privacy is a curtain. So like that's all you have is a curtain on a little bed that is a little wider than my shoulders, about an inch longer than I am, and that's it. That's your entire private space, you may share it with two other people.
So you're living basically in a coffin.
Yep, we call them coffin racks.
You do.
Yep.
All right, because that's what I'm picturing. I'm just like, this poor dude was.
For real, it is creepy.
What's a day on a submarine like you?
Well, when I was on, we worked on an 18-hour day, so instead of a 24, so it was three rotating shifts of 6 hours apiece. Nowadays, they work on a 24-hour day, so they do 8-hour shifts instead. So it was...
How often are you underwater submarining the whole time?
Like modern submarines, because of nuclear reactors, don't really need to take on air all that frequently. They have technology that helps them to make oxygen underwater and keep you underwater longer. It's pretty wild. The technology that goes into modern submarines is pretty neat. That's why they cost
billions of dollars
to make.
And is this what you wanted to do? Were you growing up wanting to be on submarines?
Honestly, no. Like I was going to college, up in Stockton, California, at University of the Pacific.
Yep. That's the Harvard of Stockton.
Right. when September 11th happened.
Oh, okay.
That went down. And then I kind of just like, wasn't really focused on school at that point. And I knew a few people that were on the planes. Like, one of my coaches from high school was on one of the planes.
Oh, because they took off from Boston.
Yeah. So, like, one of my mom's friends was on one of the planes. And a couple of people that, like, had, not that I knew well, but, like, had been in and out of my life.
The connections.
And my whole family is, like, firefighters as well. So, like, they had all tore ass down from Boston to New York that day. And, like, you couldn't call from the West Coast to the East Coast. And all the phone lines were jammed because, the towers were on top of the Twin Towers. So, it was a really disorienting day. And I remember just sitting out here in California being like, is this really what I want to do with my life? Like, what am I doing?
Were you studying?
International relations.
Wow.
Yeah. I
could have used you before 9/11.
Before 9/11, yeah. If I had been there, no.
If only you would have graduated earlier.
Yeah, no. It was, you know, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I was 18 years old. You know,
right.
I had no idea what I wanted to be. And, you know, so I left. I kicked around for about a year. Took some classes, became an EMT. Didn't like that job either. So
that's helping people from an ambulance.
Yeah.
Always seemed terrible.
Yeah, it's not great. It's great for some people. Some people are tailor made for that job. Some people just aren't. Like
how much of your job is like helping homeless dudes who
a lot
crapped on themselves?
Most of it.
Yeah, most.
Oh,
of
that
it.
And like driving old people from their nursing home to the hospital.
Right.
And that's like the. It's
probably
very
some good
depressing.
Stories there, though, right?
So, like, the first day I was in an ambulance, we had to transport a 60-plus-year-old prostitute who had tried to kill herself by drinking a bunch of bleach and ammonia.
She was just in her prime, though.
I know, right? And like, there she was in the back, and it's, like, the two guys that were, like, the really trained guys, and I was just on a ride-along. Like, they're in the front giggling, and I'm stuck in the back with this lady, and, like, all I can smell is, like, just heavy bleach cleaner smell, and she's just like jovial, like, And she was apparently a frequent flyer because, like, the guy who was driving the truck,
is that what they call people that you pick up a lot?
Frequent flyers. Yeah.
Beautiful.
And, like, so the guy who was driving the truck, like, knew her by name.
That's
like,
great.
Just, like, knew it. She was like, oh, yeah, Gloria, you know, what's up?
He said that's because he's given her lots of rides in the ambulance.
Yeah.
I cannot confirm or deny why he knew her.
Yeah. He did not frequent her services.
He was an older gentleman himself, so yeah. I can't judge.
Listen, everyone deserves a good time.
Absolutely right.
Hey, party, you know? I don't know how he knew her, but they had a prior relationship.
There was an understanding. Yeah.
I think there's a business opportunity for elderly prostitution via ambulance.
I mean, it's entirely... I feel like if they could take them from home to home,
yeah,
that would be a valid service, I feel like.
It's know? Something, then, you know...
I mean, if their Viagra's clientele out there, old people older, are fucking these days. Know? It's crazy.
Old people are fucking these
they
days.
Are. They're getting STDs and everything. It's crazy.
Tune in next week to Fucking Old People with
old
Rick Ingram.
Old people are fucking...
We only talk to the people who need scientific help for erections. That's our bread and butter. Yeah. All right, so you do this.
Yeah, I didn't like it, so I didn't end up going like into that, you know. And
how long is training for that kind of thing?
It takes a while. The class took like a semester, okay, basically, and it was a pretty involved class. It's not easy. It's not like going to a normal first aid class. It's a lot more stuff that goes into it.
Right.
But then, yeah, I kicked around there. I was looking for like different jobs. I was working crappy jobs. I was like the check-in guy at the gym for a while. That was pretty terrible.
Now, are you doing all this in Stockton?
No. This is back in Massachusetts.
Oh, you went back.
Yeah, I went back home. Right. So, you know, tail tucked between my legs.
Sure.
You know, went home. And then literally, like, the only person that was calling me back for a job was the Navy recruiter. And my mom went on vacation, and they came to my house and had me sit down and take this test. And I was like, okay, sit down, take the test. They're like, oh, it'll take you 20 minutes, 30 minutes or something. Mind if we watch some TV? Go ahead.
So
they're expecting to like sit around while I finish this exam, right?
So the Navy recruiter comes to your waits for your mom to leave town. By the way,
super shady. No, that was me. That was me scheduling.
That was you. Okay,
like,
you
she didn't want
out.
Me even talking to them.
Dude, my mom's not going to be here. Come by. Let's talk military.
Let's roll. So like they had me take this test. I finished in like 10 minutes or something like that. It was not a long time. They were surprised. They were like, "Are you sure you finished the test?" I was like,
this is like Luke Wilson in Idiocracy.
Yeah, I'm like, dude, it says you're done. Yeah. Like, he's like, is it the right you're done? I'm like, Jesus, dude.
They just wanted to watch their show. Man.
Yeah.
Yeah, apparently I was into
the stage their lives on. You know?
Yeah. Their soaps were on.
Sorry, Rick at the Pawn Stars was you know, really keeping him interested. But like, you know, so I took the exam and they're like, oh, okay, so check it out. And I did well on it. They're like, okay, great. So they had me go and take the ASVAB exam, which is the...
What kind of questions are on the recruitment test, by the way? What are we looking at here?
There's a lot of, like, weird, like, technical spatial questions. It's like, if you turn a bolt this way, like, what, you know, a cog turns this way, which way does it turn this thing? And just, it's a general aptitude test. So they're just trying to see, like, do you speak English? Do you understand what you're doing? Yeah. Are you mentally capable of taking the oath of service?
Sure.
You know, do you have any kind of technical skill that they can exploit?
And then no matter what, even if you're super dumb, they're like, we've got a spot for you.
Oh, no, there's a minimum.
There is. Okay.
yeah, there's a minimum. Some of them, it depends on what service you go into, but that minimum changes based on what you're going to do.
So if you fail this thing, they're not going to be like, how do you feel about peeling potatoes?
Yeah, no, there is an actual like minimum thing that you can't really go below.
And they say, sorry, you're going to have to do the Army.
They'll probably just ask you to come back and take it again.
Yeah. In all honesty. You can do better.
So like I went in there thinking I was going to be a corpsman, which is a medic, right?
Okay.
Because I had just taken EMT course. Sure. It seemed like the thing I was going to do. They took my exam results, looked at them, and said, you're going to go talk to this guy. And they literally walked me out of the exam room into this other office with this Master Chief Billy Sunday from, you know, the De Niro guy from, was that Cuba Gooding Jr. De Niro movie?
Oh, yeah.
A Few Good Men? No. I can't remember what it is. It's about Navy divers. They locked me in the room with basically that guy. They put me in with this really gruff
Come on,
dude.
Italian girl. What's the name of the De Niro movie?
Oh, like IMDb.
Yeah.
De Niro Pacino films.
But Men of Honor, that's the movie.
Oh, okay.
It's a great movie. But they put me in the room with this guy, the De Niro character, who's this gruff, like really kind of intimidating guy. And sat me down with this dude, and he's just like, "Yeah, you're not gonna be a corpsman. You're gonna be a nuke, a nuclear operator." I was like, "Okay, what do I not get a choice?" He's like, "Trust me, you're gonna do this. You're gonna advance faster. You're gonna get college credit. You know, your career will be a lot different, and you'll have a lot more job prospects when you get out."
He's like,
"You're gonna do this. You have the aptitude for it. You scored high enough in the exam that we don't even have to have you take another exam to get into it." He's like, "You're going." So
wow.
I was like, "Well, I guess this guy knows what he's talking about." You know,
where's your mom during all this?
Oh, she's somewhere.
She's still out of town.
Yeah, she's out of town at this point. So I go through and decide.
And by the way, was the fear with mom was that mom wouldn't let you join the military? Or she wouldn't want you to?
She definitely did not want me to, okay. For sure. Like, she was like, "Don't talk to these guys while I'm gone. Don't
There's a war anything. Going on.
Yeah, and, like, don't do anything." You know, and I just had this feeling. I was like, I'm just going to talk to him. I'm going to see what happens. And next thing you know, it just kind of kept feeling like the right thing to do at the time. You know, and I didn't really have any other motivation. I didn't have anything else that I knew I wanted to do. So, you know, these guys are saying, "Hey, here's a job. You're qualified to be this.
Yeah.
When you get out of the Navy, you'll have this amount of skill. You'll be able to slot into jobs."
What is it you're doing specifically? Are you doing basically like engineering or?
So yeah, it's kind of like, I was basically a really specifically trained electrician.
Okay.
So like an electrician, we learned how to repair things. And in fact, on the submarine, we were the only electricians. So we were repairing the toaster, the dryer, lighting, all that stuff,
right.
But also the nuclear reactor. And we were learning how to generate power and work on these, you know, several thousand kilowatt turbines and these big machines. And like
that, it's a decent range from nuclear turbines to toasters.
You'd be surprised.
Yeah. Very similar.
Same thing. You know,
you just bang on the side
of
it.
Yeah. I mean, a nuclear reactor is just a hot rock that makes water boil. That's all it is. Huh. In reality, like that is the effect that happens.
What's all the kerfuffle about?
Yeah,
then,
now
really?
Now I feel like you just gave terrorists a recipe.
No, they can watch Chernobyl on HBO and get the idea.
You know what?
See what happens when you do it.
I did
wrong.
Watch it, and I was thinking, you know, I could do this now. Yeah. But totally, if you haven't seen it, definitely watch it just for the Scottish guy who's
so
butt naked at one point.
Yeah, it's so cringy to me to watch that show.
Which episode is that?
That's episode four.
Yeah.
What's great about that show, not that this has anything to do with you, but is that none of the actors have Ukrainian accents.
Oh, yeah, they're
like,
all British
almost
guys.
None of them. It's all British guys. And then like one dude, you're like, that dude is clearly Scottish.
But
so normal Americans, they just hear an accent.
But he was like a Ukrainian guy, so it worked. You know, like,
you're like, he doesn't sound like he's speaking
he's
real
fine.
English. He's
that,
good.
That whole thing is just like an example of how not to do shit.
Yeah.
It's like they violated like every single thing you could do wrong in that situation.
The Soviet
just,
way.
Yeah, it's just so amazing that they even got the thing to work in the first place.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was the way they thought, and it's wild. But yeah, we did that for about 10 years.
You're the nuclear electrician.
I was one of the nuclear electricians on my boat. There were about 14 of us.
Wow.
Sounds like a wrestling character.
Right?
The
nuclear
electrician.
Yeah. But yeah, it was a wild time. You know, I was in my 20s and I was based out of Pearl Harbor, Hawaii. So I lived there for about six years.
Yeah.
I never saw the place cause we were always out to sea.
Right.
I mean, I spent the first year I was there, I was out to sea 8 months out of the year.
Wow.
So, you know, and we were out 2 weeks, come back for a few days, go back out 3 weeks, back and forth. It's a wild schedule.
Pearl Harbor's weird. I went there as a tourist and, you know, my dad really wanted to go. I think that was the reason why we went.
Yeah.
And I just remember kind of being like, this is kind of a weird thing to
trippy.
See. Especially the alarming number of Japanese tourists taking smiling pictures and like really relishing in this was a good victory for us. And you're like, should they be allowed to?
I mean, we're allowed at Nagasaki, so, you know, like they should be allowed at Pearl Harbor.
Give me that chance.
Yeah, I've been there. It's wild. I mean, I was giving a tour to some friends there when some Japanese aviators were taking a tour at the same time, and they were there in military uniform and everything, and it was like,
They're looking at you like this motherfucker.
The audacity.
What do you do? You're like, I'm a nuclear. I mean, not a nuclear. Yeah.
No, I don't. I'm not in the Navy at all. Meanwhile, I'm in full dress Navy uniform.
Yeah, I mostly do toaster stuff.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, just fix a dryer, man. You know, that job, like, I mean, just the breadth of stuff we worked on.
Yeah,
gave me just a lot of skills that I was able to translate. You know, just like reading different manuals, learning how to do these different things, and then you're dealing with people, and you're locked in quarantine with 140 people for a long amount of time.
So you know? COVID is old hat for you.
You know, I was telling my friends that like I was literally trained about isolation and like how isolation affects people. And I was telling my friends, I was like, you're going to see it. Watch, after about 30 days, everyone you live with is going to completely change. And you're going to see these masks that they're wearing that you think is your friend just kind of fall away slowly over a little bit of time. And that's who the real person is right there. It's that terrible person. That's the real one.
Thank you for saying it, because I didn't want to say
I hate
your
people.
Friends.
I'm right there with
okay,
you.
Okay, good.
So, you know,
we're going to heal you by the end of this.
No, I'm counting on you. I'm way too broken.
Oh, yeah. He's one of them stubborn ones.
Yeah,
we can't fix him.
You don't want to start this kind of thing. Millions of dollars worth of healing needed. But yeah, it's like...
I mean, I'm accepting.
Yeah.
Are you into millions?
My account is open.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know. You just watch people change. And we used to literally do that on the submarine and put people in stressful situations when they would first get there, to see how they would react, you know. And it was just like eating your young, you know, you're stressing these people, stressing, and seeing how they're going to break. You know, when they break, are they going to shut down? Are they going to get aggressive? Are they going to, what is going to happen? And people do these different things. It's fight or flight. Some people just shut down altogether, you know, and they're completely useless, you know. And, you know, it happens to all of us. And you know, you're like, you guys were talking about earlier, breaking people down, building them back up.
Yeah.
And it was our job.
That's the U.S. military's way.
It really
does. Most military's way.
It happens and it works. And you
build them back the way you want them.
Mentality of like how to get through stuff. And it just makes like any other job that I've done since then has just not been that important. Like not that serious. Like it's like, what am I doing today? Oh, that's going to suck. All right, let's go.
Yeah. Yeah. But thankfully, you're not in a tube with 140
exactly.
dudes.
Exactly. Yeah, so I'm not locked in a tube with 140 guys anymore, so it can't be that bad.
What was there ever a situation, you probably can't talk specifics, but where your submarine is in some sort of a standoff with...
Yeah, I can't give you any kind of operational intelligence. That would be very illegal, and I would go to jail.
Yeah, well... Yeah. Illegal talks with Rick Ingram starting next week.
Tim goes to jail the following week.
Yeah, which is gonna episode one is gonna be hot.
It's gonna be
that's
wild.
The arrest.
Yeah, catch me in about 30 more years, and then I can start talking.
That's
about
when they declassify.
50 years is
really
general. Yeah.
50
years.
That's brutal.
Freedom of Information Act, I think, picks up after that amount of time.
If you had to nuke though one country.
Mm.
Personally, not via the military.
Like carry it myself.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You're in charge. Who do we nuke? I know.
Yeah. That's a tough one.
Well, years ago I did this comedy.
I'm going to go with like Missouri.
Nice.
No.
Great answer. Great answer.
No, that's not accurate.
Truman.
Somewhere in the South.
This is payback for
that's
Truman.
Not right either. Yeah. I don't know. That's a tough question. Maybe Greenland. Just to see it go
melt
off.
It down.
No, not where the people are. Just put it up north somewhere. It'll
smart.
Be fine. You know.
Listen.
The ice caps are already melting.
Yeah,
they're already melting.
So
it's
we might
be
as well
fine.
Melt them all the way.
It'll be fine.
This is going to be the best way to really teach those people who live seaside.
Have you heard of nuclear winter?
Yeah.
Just cool it right back down.
So smart. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
That's we're going to refreeze
the
ice caps.
Did you watch
the
core?
We
got to go into the core of the earth and set off a bunch of nukes.
So smart.
So instead of heating the rock, you freeze it.
Oh yeah.
And it has the adverse effect.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Perfect.
So simple.
Chef's kiss.
Just, so simple.
What are we worried about?
I did this weird comedy show years ago with, I forget what it's called. It's like the Young Presidents Organization or something.
Okay.
And it's like all these rich CEOs, and they basically have a club that they meet together and basically have a whose dick is bigger contest. And, you know, it's probably one, maybe a quarter women who are also just swinging how big their CEO dicks are.
I'm going to guess that the women's dicks are the biggest.
They were pretty big. Yeah. There was one guy who owned like...
You need a woman CEO. She's got the biggest dick in the room, Jay.
They had to get to where they are, get over those hurdles.
Yeah.
But it was weird because they booked me, and they actually booked Sarah, the girl who's usually here doing the podcast with me. It was me and Sarah and this other comic who's terrible. And he was the guy who booked us. And they had Michael Flynn was the guest speaker beforehand.
Wild.
So like when he started getting famous and was, you know, a traitor basically, I'm just like, man, I know this guy. And he spent a solid like 20 minutes just talking about how China is bad, but Russia is the really bad one. And just all these CEOs just nodding their heads like, I'll do business with them. That sounds good. Whatever's cheap. Let's do this. It was very odd. So he spoke for 20 minutes about the state of affairs in the world and the things that America needs to be looking out for and doing all this stuff. And then they're like, all right, who's ready for comedy? And so I had to follow Michael Flynn's The World is Going to Hell
speech. So the room was ready for
it. It was ready. It was.
Because
I went up and just started roasting people.
Nice.
I didn't realize that some of the CEOs had their families at this dinner.
Nice.
And so I'm up there talking about, you know,
just
how many
blue immediately,
yeah, how many dead prostitutes is this room responsible for?
Daddy, no.
Yeah, and then I just see a lady get up with a kid, and I'm like, oh, sorry about that. Not your dad. He let the hookers live.
She was the one that lived.
Yeah. You know, he couldn't kill her once she was pregnant, I think, was probably the situation.
I mean, the Kennedys would argue with that.
Well, they certainly would. But you're from Massachusetts, so you can make a Kennedy's joke.
Yeah, I can
joke.
Say that, though. Yeah.
I wouldn't be able to get away with it.
Yeah.
But again...
I really shouldn't, because, you know, there are royalty. But, you know, it's...
In a way. But now there's that super crazy
An Irish family that started with a bootlegger that became president of the United States. That, if that's not like a, you know,
that is
Irish
the American
success story, that's
yeah.
America right there.
Is that I didn't realize there was bootlegging
Joe
going
Kennedy?
On.
Joe Kennedy? Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I don't go back any further than JFK.
That's his dad. His dad was a giant bootlegger in New York City, bought up a bunch of land in Manhattan.
Yep.
And that...
With his bootlegger money?
Yeah.
Nice.
And then that was how they became rich.
So are you saying that Massachusetts would be nothing without New York?
That's
no,
exactly...
I'm saying Massachusetts
exactly
owned New York
said.
At one point.
No.
Trust
me.
The Kennedys owned New York.
That's not what anyone in this room or on this
come
podcast
off.
Heard,
it didn't
sir.
Come off that
you take,
way.
You take your garbage town.
I've never smelled the trash of Boston. I will say that.
It is glorious.
Is it?
Yeah.
It's a special... It's a wicked smell.
It's just a wonderful smell.
Whole city smells like... rotten chowder this time of year. You don't have an accent. That kind of bothers me.
A lot of people don't. It depends
on the educated
where you are.
Areas.
It comes back when I talk to people that are from there. Like I talk to my mom on the phone, and then for a while after that, I'll have my accent.
Yeah.
But I never really had a real thick one. My cousins, like my cousins grew up in South Boston. Like their father, my uncle, he's.
It kind of came out on father.
Father.
They had him on, I think, Conan. As one of those like people speaking in a Boston accent.
Oh yeah.
Like he was one of those guys and his accent, I could barely understand him half the time, but
that's beautiful.
He's a great guy. He was a firefighter, fire rescue guy for 30 years or something.
Damn.
He's the guy that literally like, it's like taking an axe and jumping in the window to save you and stuff like that.
See, I'm more of a coward type.
Oh yeah.
I'm not into that.
Yeah. No.
You know, if there's a fire, I'm watching. I'm definitely not going to tear anything down.
But thankfully, those guys
You're
are out
spectator.
There because those guys will pull you out of there.
Where would entertainment be without spectators?
Yeah, I, you know, I'm all for the fires.
Yeah.
I don't want to have to do anything about it.
I mean, firefighters are pretty big pyros generally.
Yeah,
you know, and they'll admit that.
You got to make work some way, you know. You can't just, you know, the what was the California, the Golden State Killer, you know, guy was a cop. But, you know, you got to know the ins and outs if you want to be successful.
If you want to be good at it.
Yeah. If you're going to be a good serial killer, at least work for a police force.
Well, I mean, Ramirez was pretty good, too. He did some
and
pretty
messed
up stuff.
He was pretty psychotic.
He was based here.
Yeah.
That's fun.
He was one of ours.
Oh, yeah.
He's an L.A. guy.
Oh, yeah. He killed, like, two ladies, like, I think two blocks from where I live right now.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, listen, if he has fans, you know... you're going to see them wandering around your neighborhood.
Probably.
So.
They're probably already there. I don't know. It's entirely possible.
Tune in next week for Fans of Serial Killers with Rick Ingram.
Oh, no. There's plenty of podcasts already. That's
saturated. That's already covered?
Saturated.
Right. The Serial Killer podcast.
Oh, yes.
We're going to stay out of that market.
Yeah. You don't want that one.
And what do you do now?
So I actually left my job in 2019 to go back to school.
Okay.
So right now I'm a full-time engineering student.
Okay.
Because that whole time...
I sensed the engineering was part of it.
Yeah. All the way up through there, I was working with my high school diploma. My last job was at SpaceX, and I worked there for 5 years.
Wow.
Starting as like a technician, kind of just banging on rocket parts with a hammer.
Yeah.
And then slowly working my way up to... I was working in test engineering as a test administrator was my title, working alongside the engineers to test rockets and do different stuff, you know. And I was testing rocket parts before that, sub-assemblies, and throwing big sleds against walls and shooting things around rooms and stuff like that. It was a lot of fun.
Nice.
The job was great. I loved it. That company was fantastic. I really enjoyed working there. The company was very good to me while I was there. You know, SpaceX gets a bad rap sometimes from angry employees.
Nice.
But I thought it was great.
All good companies do.
Yeah. I mean, I had a great time working there. And, you know, and it was a tough decision to leave. But, I mean, I'm pushing 40.
Yeah.
And I didn't have a college degree. And I'm getting to that point in my career where it was like,
this will hold you back.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I was kind of at the top of where I could go. I could have kind of like maybe baby stepped some more, but I'm just kind of tired of doing it the hard way.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I've been doing it the hard way for 30 years, basically.
I hear you.
The same job.
I just turned 40 in April, and yeah. I'm at the point now where I'm like, you know what? I really should have done something other than comedy. I understand where you come from. Like, man, maybe just one skill set of any kind.
Comedy is a great risk reward, though.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you get some good comedy, and you're pretty set.
I feel like I'm really good at comedy, yeah. And I'm really bad at being able to develop fake relationships nice. With industry
yeah.
types.
Yeah,
and
because they are the worst.
Yeah, and that apparently is 99% of it.
Yes.
So you yeah. can be really good, but if you're not willing to like talk to some asshole and just be like, "Oh man, that would be so fun. Yeah, we should go strangle hookers together." I assume that's like the main thing you're supposed
but
to do.
But that's every job, though. Every job is the same way. Like if you're like. Okay, so
is there no strangling hookers in your profession?
Okay, so there's going to be somebody who, like, you need to be good with people in your job. You need to be good with dealing with people that you may or may not like.
So wait, are we saying that the dichotomy is strangling hookers and being good at talking to people?
Well, yeah.
Those are the bookends of
clearly.
Okay. I'm just establishing the playing field here.
Am I doing this
here.
Wrong?
Yep.
These are the goalposts.
Have I done this wrong this whole time?
Okay. You're either...
I told you I was broken.
You're either strangling hookers or you're a hooker. Those are the two types of people in
preferably
life.
Preferably a 60-something-year-old hookers who frequents...
Whose name is not Gloria, at the same time,
I wish
if it is, so be it.
I do wish I could remember what her actual name was. I feel like it would really give that story some punch.
I'm honestly so disturbed that there's... I mean, I guess maybe she didn't get into hooking until later in life.
I don't know that she was still active at that point. I know that she was...
She just was.
She had been at one point, because that was how she was introduced to me by the guy who was
then working with me. Maybe she was a legend. Maybe she was, like, the best in her game.
Maybe she was.
Yeah.
I feel like her name was Bernadette, not Gloria.
She was Bernadette.
I feel like you're giving her too much, like, clout. Like, you're giving her some, like,
1940s,
like, class.
Yeah, that's what I was picturing.
Why not?
She wasn't a Bernadette.
I
only have the fantasy of Bernadette.
She was on the seniors tour.
You're giving her a lot, and I'll just let you know that stuff wasn't there. It just wasn't there.
All right, is there anything you want to promote?
I got nothing to promote.
You got nothing
whatsoever. I'm just
you're just here to talk, and
I'm just here to hang out and have a good time. You know, and
I saw
the thing and was like, yeah, I guess I'll go. On a podcast. I've never been on a podcast before. I'll be interviewed and talk about some crazy shit.
We honestly haven't had anyone from nuclear submarines yet.
Not a lot of people have, so you got that in your pocket.
Yeah. I mean, again, we've been calling this podcast People from Nuclear Submarines, and we finally found someone.
Finally nailed it. I mean, you want some more? I got some guys you can interview.
Well, thank you for being on. I appreciate it. You guys are awesome. And I think we're wrapping. Is that it? All right. That's cool. Thanks for listening. Tune in next week. Thank you to you guys for being here.
All right, thanks.
And
Thank you.
Entertaining, man. You guys are very interesting. Awesome. So I appreciate it. Thanks, guys. Tune in next time. Bye.
If you'd like to be a guest on our show, please DM Ingram Pod on Twitter. That's Ingraham Pod on Twitter. Special thanks to The Comedy Store and to Brian Rips for the dope-ass music.